Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the podcast where we agonize over how long it will be until the Doom Patrol have their own comic again.
I'm Reading _ Hicks on Twitter, and my name is Paul Hicks in real life. And you're?
I'm Mike, but you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve, and you can find Wilfred, our sentient show account, at WFDPod.
So welcome to episode 6 of the Waiting for Doom podcast. Today on the show, we'll be looking at the very first story that Grant Morrison wrote for the Doom Patrol, Crawling from the Wreckage.
We are also then going to have a look at the Mailbag O'Doom at the end of the show, where we asked our listeners what the best creative change in direction on a comic title was, in their opinion.
Yes, and then we'll sign off the show, and then we'll have a good rest.
Yes. So in this episode, for something a little bit different, we're going to do...
Not wearing pants.
Not out in public. God. We're actually going to do our first giveaway. To celebrate not only our 6th episode, they said we wouldn't make it, but to also celebrate the fact that a friend of the show, Carl D. Smith, who is at Carl Smith Writer on Twitter, his graphic novel, The Horror of Loon Lake, has started reaching its Kickstarter backers this week. And I can say that quite confidently because I got my copy. So it's a really cool idea. It's basically a whole bunch of different horror stories that Carl has written, and he's gotten different artists to help out and take on different stories. There's kind of a continuing thread between most of the stories. I've not been able to finish all of it yet because it like just arrived this afternoon. But in any case, what we're going to do is we're going to give away a copy of Horror of Loon Lake. So what we will do after this episode is launched, we will get Wilfred, our sentient show account, to post a picture of the cover of Horror of Loon Lake. And what you guys will need to do, if you want to win the copy, is favorite and retweet that picture.
And follow us. Follow us.
And follow us. Yes. Okay.
Follow Wilfred.
Follow Wilfred. Yes. You've got to be following us, Wilfred. You've got to favorite the picture, and you've got to retweet it.
And you've got to wear no pants.
Pants optional, sure. We'll do the same thing on the Facebook page, but you'll need to actually follow the Facebook page.
We won't wear pants.
You'll have to share the photo and you'll have to like it as well. And that way you double your chances of getting your name drawn from the hat. And we will announce the winner on our next episode. So you've got about a week to get your act together and go in the running to win this really cool book. And congrats again to Carl on getting the book out there. It looks really cool. I've read a couple of the opening stories in it, and I like it. I'd rate it. I would.
You rate it?
I rate it. Yeah.
Excellent. Well done, Carl.
Yeah. Good work, Carl. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're all talking about stuff. You're doing it.
He's living the dream.
Living the
comics dream.
He's on the path.
Yes. Look, today Loon Lake, tomorrow the world. You know?
Top stuff, Carl.
Yes. Wait a minute. What's that ticking?
Is it the Doom Clock?
It is the Doom Clock.
Awesome.
So this week on the Doom Clock, guess what? The numbers have finally changed.
Gosh, is that the passage of time?
It is indeed the passage of time. Yes, the final issue of Doom Patrol Volume 5, number 22, shipped back in July 2011. So it's been just over 3.5 years now. So we're like 3 years and 7 months now since they had their own series. And their last appearance in DC Land was Justice League number 33 from October of 2014. So that's now 3 months since we've seen them in action. However, this week, in 1993 of Doom Patrol history, we had issue 64 of volume 2 going on sale for the princely sum of $1.75 American.
Wow.
This was the first time that the Doom Patrol appeared as part of the Vertigo imprint. And it was also the first issue to be written by Rachel Pollack. It kicked off the Sliding of the Wreckage arc, and it showed Dorothy Spinner, who has the ability to bring to life her imaginary friend, shall we say. She was basically fighting off bizarre African jungle warrior spirit things and stuff. It was really freaky.
Was it? I haven't read that.
Oh, well. Okay.
I'll have to get there one day.
Well, I'm pretty sure we'll get you there one day. One day.
Do we have some sort of platform where we can talk about these sorts of things? Like some sort of forum? Some space? A channel for us to express?
If we look into there's a social media thing, I think. We might be able to get on there.
Speed dating?
Yep. Doom Patrol. That's high up there on the speed dating hot tips and topics, I'm sure. That's the Doom Clock for this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, it's the thing you've all been waiting for. It is the debut of us talking about Grant Morrison's long, culture-changing run on the Doom Patrol, which started with the Doom Patrol number 19 in 1989.
88? 89. You had it right.
89.
89. You were testing me, and I passed. Hooray.
I'm Mike.
But yes, this was a game changer.
It was. Yes, everything was different with this issue, and the Doom Patrol have never been the same since.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So up to this point, the Doom Patrol had been a pretty regular superhero team. They weren't too different. They had young people. They had a robot man. They took on enemies. They were, always on the job, and they were always fighting regular types of things. But with this issue, Grant Morrison came in like an atom bomb and shook everything up. And one of the things he really wanted to do was to scare the crap out of people and to make everything creepy and weird.
Mission accomplished, really.
Mission accomplished. Mm. Yeah.
Like the first page of issue 19, we see Cliff reliving the accident he had as a race car driver. And he's sort of crawling from the wreckage of the car as this weird half-zombie, half-robot thing cradling his brain in his hands and saying, "I saved the beautiful bit. I saved it." And he wakes up screaming the next page. It's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. And it's full of nightmares, and there's just a lot of analysis of what it's like to be one day a man who's alive and normal, and the next day to be a man who's in a robot, just a brain in a robot shell.
Mm.
And just the isolation you'd feel, the horror of that, the ability you can't hurt yourself, you can't do anything normal, you can't touch people the way everyone else can.
Yeah.
And it's quite disturbing, and it's a layer that never really got explored too much before this.
No. That's what I was thinking as well, reading this story arc, in that a lot of it is Cliff clearly not dealing too well at all with his situation. Even though he'd been in the preceding 18 issues, this is the first time it kind of really touched on how it would feel to be as powerful and as strong as he is, but still not quite human.
Yeah, and it came off the back of the Invasion miniseries. So I've mentioned this before. When Grant Morrison was coming in, he asked basically Paul Cooperberg to clear the decks of the team. So a lot of the team got killed off just immediately before this, and it was really the people who looked pretty normal and pretty standard.
Yeah.
Except probably for Joshua Clay.
Well, yeah, he's still around, but even he's questioning everything. Um, he he's sort of facing off with the chief, who's saying, Joshua, stay around and be part of my new Doom Patrol. And Joshua's like, no, I can't do this anymore, you know. I'll help you out a bit, but I'm not going to go in the field and use my powers anymore. So,
yeah. And the chief sends Will Magnus in to help Cliff cope with his current situation. Now, Will Magnus is a classic DC good guy, crazy scientist, I think it's fair to say.
Yes.
And and he's the creator of the Metal Men, who are sort of wacky robots made out of different types of metal. So you've got mercury, lead, gold, platinum, and they've all got personalities, and you know, they're all a bit dumb and lame, but they're charming. Yeah. No, they're charming.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the mistake with the Doom, with the Metal Men is people try to make them serious and badass, and that's the worst thing you can do with them, because they are goofy and charming.
I don't know how helpful Will Magnus was in his dealings with Cliff, to be honest, but...
Well, there's a couple of key things he does. Basically, he says, you know, you're suffering, but you're not the worst off person around. And he introduces Cliff to a lady called Kay Chalice. We'll get to him in a minute. And the other thing he says is, yeah, your body is kind of crude and it doesn't allow you to feel anything. I'll look into that. So he leaves with a promise that he'll consider that. But introducing Cliff to Kay is one of the most important introductions in the Doom Patrol history. And that's where Cliff meets Crazy Jane.
Yeah, she's really interesting, but a really tragic character as well. And it's all laid out in you know, the first half of this story arc. Essentially, she has multiple personalities, and each which was, you know, caused by trauma suffered from childhood abuse, and each different personality has a different superpower. I love... I know she. This is just her first introduction, but the way she grows over the arc of Morrison's Doom Patrol is really cool to see. And when she was brought back for the Giffen and Clark era of Doom Patrol, I was so happy to see her back. Yeah. Unfortunately, she didn't get to do much in that run. But if they'd had a longer run, I would have loved to have seen more of her. In that team, but
but her therapists say that she has 64 separate personalities, and each have their own name, and each of them has their own powers in some cases. So, you know, so sometimes she looks exactly the same, but she's changed personality, and suddenly, you know, she'll be timid and shy, and other times she'll be really mean and snappy, and sometimes there's a physical change, so she'll turn into a monstrous clawed creature, and you know, sometimes she's giant with a sun head and she's shooting fireballs here and there. And she has like a personality for when she's sad and one for when she's bubbly, and she has a personality called Driver 8, who is the coordinator of the underground, where she keeps her personalities in like stations, and the Driver 8 is the one who travels between all the different personalities and, you know, keeps things running smoothly in that brain.
There is a later issue where you do see more into Jane's psyche, and it's pretty much the story's led by the Driver, and that's so well done when you do get to that issue. But that's not for quite some time yet. So the other amazing, interesting change in this is what they did with Larry and Negative Man.
Yeah, Larry had spent quite a bit of time without the Negative Man possessing him in this run up to this point. And it was with Valentina Vostok, the Russian pilot spy lady.
Yes.
Black Widow.
Yes, because I had Negative Woman in most of the Kupperberg written team.
Yeah, but in this, Larry is finally united with the energy being, except... it drags another person into the mix, a lady called Eleanor Poole, who's a doctor where Larry is in the hospital there. And
poor Eleanor.
The energy being merges them into one being and calls itself Rebus.
As you do.
Yeah. And this is a real change for Larry, because in the past he's been normal with the negative being inside him that he unleashes. And suddenly the negative being is running the show here.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's clearly a hermaphroditic being as well when he's sort of floating in midair and quite clearly has breasts and his entire body covered in the bandages, and no one's quite sure what to make of Rebus or how Rebus came about.
Cliff has to adapt to the fact that maybe Larry isn't there so much anymore.
Yes. But I love how the chief basically wheels himself into Larry's room, or Rebus's room by this stage, and just looks at Rebus and says, you know what, how would you like to join the Doom Patrol? You know, Niles just doesn't care. He's just...
Yeah. It's all about his team and what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So some massive changes that the team have gone through there. And then there's sort of hints dropped throughout the issues about a new secretive group called the Scissor Men.
Yes. And this is where it gets very Grant Morrison, I guess. Just there's a group of authors have created a fictional reality that is self-replicating and is invading our reality.
Yes.
So this fake world called Orquith merging into our world. And basically it's unleashing all these horrors. So people are basically being cut out of reality and pulled into Orquith and leaving these like paper white cutouts in the real world.
Mm.
And there's really awful things going on. I think at one stage a priest gets hit by a giant fridge.
Yep.
As normally happens.
Mm. Shouldn't laugh, but yeah. But yeah, there's a scene where Cliff and Jane kind of become aware that something's not quite right when they go outside the hospital, and there's basically a park field with all these what appear to be bodies trying to escape something, and it's actually just the cutout outlines of the people that aren't even there anymore. And Cliff's just like, what the hell? What's happening? In the name of God, what's happening? So things are being cut out of our reality and being merged into Orquith. And yeah, as you said, I think this was Morrison basically pushing all the way down on the accelerator, on the Morrison crazy train.
Yeah, and he really sells it with some really interesting descriptions of things like railway stations made of bone and... The Scissor Men appear and they just talk in gibberish that's really quite unnerving.
I think that's one of the signs that Doom Patrol were never going to be the same from this point on. When you've got something as alien and as chaotic as the Scissor Men just talking their bizarre drivel and just going around causing all this chaos and mayhem, and you're like, what the hell's going on? It's just insane, but you know, really grabs you at the same time.
Yeah. And the team basically have to go into this alternate reality and sort everything out.
Mm.
Which isn't as easy as it seems.
Nothing ever is, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, Crawling from the Wreckage is just a four-part story arc, but it packs a lot in. And by the time the team fully goes into Orquith, it's just stuff's gone just really crazy. And the Scissor Men are on the rampage, and Cliff's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. Rebus is starting to show all these new superpowers as well. It's because we're so used to seeing Negative Man fly out of Larry's body and Larry's body falling limp to the ground. In this iteration, it's actually just Rebus, him or herself, just flying around, sort of all lit up in green energy. So,
well, at one stage, the body is doing one thing and the energy is doing something else, and they're both flying. That's a real new look for Larry.
Just a bit, yes.
Yeah. But there's also, I mean, it's interesting because most people would think this is all a Vertigo book, but there's really all these ties to the DC universe. Like in the middle of this story, the chief moves the team into the Justice League's old base at Rhode Island in a cave.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they were still trying to, I think it was difficult at the time because they were trying to have one foot in Strange New Vertigo land and the other foot in DC proper land, yeah. with things like the mention of the JLA's old headquarters. So, yeah.
And Cliff says at one point, if we had any sense, we'd call Superman. But you know, it's clear that Superman wouldn't really know what to do with invading realities and, you know, this bizarre overriding of our own existence.
I wonder if Superman has ever actually faced anything that weird.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would be a very good fit for Superman.
Probably not. I would love to hear from any of our listeners that can definitively say yes or no, he has faced something like that.
What's the weirdest Superman story?
There we go. Yeah, yeah, let us know.
And not the one where he makes a porno with Big Barda.
What?
Look it up, folks. Look it up.
Oh, you've got to be joking me. Anyhow, this story arc, as I said, it's a game changer. It's quite dark and depressing in some bits, but also by that fourth issue, there's a bit of hope there in that the team shows that they can work together and that they can overcome, spoiler warning, they can overcome weirdness to this level. So it's a really interesting arc and a really interesting new direction for the team as well.
Yeah, and the chief too. He has a really a ruthless edge. He, you know, he's happy to shoot someone in the legs to get information, which is a side of him we haven't really seen before. He's always been a bit controlling, but here he's cutthroat.
Well, yeah, like we said in our last episode, the team were a lot more fun and adventurous. You know, with the chief sort of directing the team where to go and everyone, you know, all for one and one for all. And this, there's always something beneath the surface with the chief. He's you can tell something else is going on there, but he kind of keeps it, a lot of it to himself. That he knows there's more going on than he's actually telling everyone.
Yeah.
So...
And there's some really good action in amongst it all. Like, it's not just crazy concepts. You know, there's some fighting and some great bits with Rebus tearing through stained glass windows and things like that.
And as you said, the bit where Crazy Jane kind of grows larger and her head turns into a blazing fireball that she can shoot at the enemies. It's like, what the hell? Yeah, it was mad, but it's really interesting stuff.
And it ends with the team agreeing. So the team of four or five, so the Chief, Robot Man, Crazy Jane, and Joshua Clay agreeing that they'll carry on as the Doom Patrol. And the last issue ends with a couple of epilogues, which is you've got Rhea Jones, who's one of the few survivors from the previous iteration of the team, who's basically in a coma, and someone mysterious visits her and calls her my sleeping beauty.
Not creepy at all.
Not creepy at all.
No.
And the other one is some sort of weird incident in Paraguay.
Yes. Someone has escaped some sort of confinement, shall we say, and as he's left the room, the footprints he leaves in the floor are kind of smouldering up the floor itself.
Yeah.
There's steam coming up. So kind of hints at other insane nastiness to befall the team in the near future. But overall, would you rate Morrison's first arc?
I'd rate the hell out of this, Mike. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was reading these when they came out, and it really was just seismic, the shift in the book. It went from being, you know, very pedestrian and a bit lackluster to just being like something I'd never read before.
Yeah.
And this was at the same time Grant Morrison was writing Animal Man, and these were my two favourite books. They were just so off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And just pushing in ways that I never knew that comics could be pushed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, highly rate it. If you read this and you don't like it, don't read the rest of the run, because it will be more likely.
Yeah, for pretty much the next 50, 60-something issues, something like that.
Math, not our strong point.
Nah. Let me get a calculator out and I'll get back to you.
44, I think. He does 44 issues.
There we go. Plus I knew it was up there.
Doom 4 special.
Ah, yes. Cool.
And what about you, Mike? You like this? Or you...
Yes, I do. I probably not quite as much as you, because you were reading them as they were coming out. And I discovered these sort of after the fact. But having read the preceding issues to Morrison's start, I completely agree. It's like they said, you know, we don't want just another stock standard team of good guys running around fighting bad guys. We want something different. And Morrison has said, well, have a plate full of different, and here we go.
With a side order of bizarre.
Yeah. Even Richard Case's artwork, it's not for everyone, I would dare say, but I love it, and I think it suits the story as well, because it's so dark and kind of off-kilter in some bits. I think I actually fell in love with Richard Case's artwork when I was reading a Marvel series called Darkhold, which was part of the Midnight Suns line. And that was about, you know, people would get this black envelope with a page from this ancient mystical tome. They would somehow be able to read it, and bad things would happen to them. And there was a team that would go and save the day and recover the page. But again, that was similar things, sort of off-kilter, slightly unusual, dark-tinged artwork. And then to realize that, hey, that same guy has drawn one of my all-time favorite things ever... That was cool to realize when I got round to it eventually. So
awesome.
Yeah. So I'd definitely rate this. But as you say, if someone is trying the Doom Patrol, specifically Morrison Doom Patrol, try the first trade before going too much further.
Well, these are on Comixology. If you just want to pick them up for $10, you could do that.
But
it's an interesting tradition that a writer will come in on a book that's already established and basically pull the rug out from under it. Alan Moore did this on Swamp Thing, where the book was pretty ordinary, and he came in and basically said, this is what I can do, and everyone just gasped. And similar things happened with Frank Miller on Daredevil. James Robinson, when he started Starman, that was a title which had a pretty ordinary name, and people weren't really enamored of it. And it really is. It's an interesting tactic where you see writers do this, where they take something that's kind of... It's a bit like, you know, coming on stage after a really ordinary comedian and then, you know, just playing the audience with the great stuff.
That's right.
Interesting tactic, and you don't see it too often these days.
No.
Okay, so we'll get onto the mailbag of doom at this point.
Yeah.
So, prompted by the subject matter of this episode, we're asking everyone, what's the best creative change in direction on a comic title? So, we have first up Schmoby One, who said, best change, Barry is the revamped Flash, ushering in the Silver Age. And I think it's hard-pressed to find a change that had more massive changes than that one.
We also heard from Keith Colbeck at Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and he said, can I just say Morrison on Doom Patrol? It's right up there.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Fine.
Good call.
Fine with us.
Yeah.
Sam Marks is also on the Morrison wagon, and he said, Morrison's new X-Men in 2001. Mm. Oh, that makes me feel old. Is that long ago? That's a really good run.
I will have to read that at some stage, I guess. Hey, I didn't read something that Sam Marks liked.
Oh, that's like...
How's his, that?
That's
what a twist.
Stick. That's
what
his whole thing.
Yeah. Take that, someone. friend of the show, Ange, Dr. Ange, he wrote in
And he's said, a doctor.
Dr. Ange. He wrote in and said the best creative change, other than Morrison on Doom Patrol, was Sterling Gates' Supergirl or Gail Simone's Bird of Prey.
Sterling Gates' Supergirl is totally, I would totally rate that. That is a really good run.
And that's
actually one of those ones where someone came in on a book that was just basically floundering and, you know, picked it up and shook it off and, you know, made it walk in a straight line. So, yeah, good work.
Cool.
Simone, Birds of Prey. I actually thought the book wasn't too bad before Simone got there, Gail Simone. But, yeah.
Okay.
It is a good run. Okay, next we've got Josh Sapien, who's the best change he recommended was Milligan and Allred on Ecstatics, which I have heard so much about but not actually read.
That makes two of us. Tim McEwen.
Don't tell anyone.
Sorry, I'll edit that bit out. Tim McEwen at TimMcEwen67 on Twitter said the best creative change would probably be Frank Miller on Daredevil. That's a change that ended up affecting the entire industry.
Yep, everything got grim and gritty. I've read those. They are very good. Very good. Yep. They're a good read, the old Daredevils.
Okay.
And we heard from Ken Henningsen at Arch Enemy Comics, and he said, hands down, Grant Morrison and Richard Case taking over Doom Patrol, completely different and revolutionary storytelling. We must read them sometime. I'm not familiar with those.
You're not?
No.
Well, okay.
I wonder if we could get our hands on that.
Yeah, Comixology, I hear. What would you say has been the best creative change in direction on a comic book, Paul?
I mentioned it before, but I think Starman by James Robinson and Tony Harris. Starman before that was just a guy in tights who did superheroic things. And they came in and created a fantastic character in Jack Knight and built on what went before without throwing it all away. And it really is one of the greatest comic runs of the last 20 years, I think.
Wow.
I really rate it.
That's a big call.
I've got the big phone out and I am dialing the big numbers on that one.
Again. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Mike?
I had a really difficult time thinking of one that really stood out to me. Because there were only two I could really think of, but they weren't really a change in an ongoing book. It was more like a reinvention of a book that had come before. And the two that I'm just going to do an equal first place with are Neil Gaiman's Sandman, because it took the old Sandman comics from the 60s and 70s and just completely reinvented part of that. So I know it's not a total creative change, and it, yeah. The other one would have to be...
in the loose parameters of the question, though.
Yeah,
I'm really up there with Sandman. Sandman is bloody great stuff.
Yeah, and some of the, you know, even some of the creatures that were in the original series ended up being in Gaiman's run as well, so...
Yeah.
The other one would have to be the current Flash Gordon series, or the one that just ended, written by Jeff Parker and art by Doc Shaner. That was just so much fun. And while I've not read a lot of the old King Syndicate Flash Gordon comic strips, they had that same sense of adventure and fun and daring do, and, you know, Dale and Flash and Dr. Zarkov just having these great adventures in this crazy alternate universe. And it was so much fun. But again, yeah, not a creative change, but more like a rebooting almost. So I've kind of failed at answering the question this week. But I stand by my choices.
Oh,
what are you going to
do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not read any of that Flash Gordon, but I like a bit of Flash. Good. Yeah.
There was
a character that appeals. He's got that, you know, sort of retro thing I like.
Yeah. I think that, again, there's a nostalgia factor. And there's also the fact that series was just really well written. And, you know, just a lot of fun. So I was very happy with the work that team did on that book. So, yeah.
Fabulous.
Indeed.
Okay, I think that's all we've got time for in this episode. Mike, where can people find us?
People can find us on our Facebook page, which is Waiting for Doom on Facebook. You can also reach us via our sentient show account, Wilfred, which is at WFDpod. And apologies in advance for anything Wilfred might say to you. You can also email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you can find our episodes on Stitcher Radio and on iTunes and on podbean.com.
Yes.
Okay, so, and that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, guys.
See you soon.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.